Please welcome to the stage, Lisa Simon.
All right. Our next program is sponsored by IHG. And IHG has been a longtime member and frequent sponsor of IITA, but unfortunately, April McGill, who was supposed to be with us, has had a situation come up that she couldn't be here. So due to that last-minute conflict, I just want to just say thank you to IHG and thank them for their ongoing support of IITA. And they have a video for us, so let's take a look at what's happening at IHG. Thank you, IHG, and for those of you who work with IHG and or know April, please extend your gratitude for their support after the summit. Our next speaker, Elliot Ferguson, currently serves as the national chair of the board of directors for the U.S. Travel Association. He guides the board and association's efforts to advance policies that facilitate more international and domestic travel. And it was his vision upon taking that position that really sparked Gary and Garrett, who serve on the U.S. Travel Board on behalf of inbound operators and IITA, to invite him to come and share it with you today. He will then facilitate a discussion with a thought leader panel who will provide further insight into what's happening across the country and probably comment on a few things that Roger shared with us already. Elliot is a 30-year veteran of the travel and hospitality industry, serves as president and CEO of Destination DC, the official destination marketing organization for Washington, D.C. He began his tenure with Destination DC in 2001 and has served as president and CEO since 2009. Please join me in welcoming our keynote, Elliot Ferguson.
Good morning. So what a pleasure to be in St. Pete. And I was thinking about some of the comments that were made about the number of people that live in Florida, Steve, that are in D.C. And I'm thinking that in the future, when you all do your marketing, you should just have a realtor in your booth as well, because, there's a correlation between that opportunity there. So I'm just putting that out there, you know, marketing guy. So I do have the pleasure of being a part of the team of at Destination DC, and on behalf of our 92-plus people, I'm happy to be here. Been out of the office for 3 weeks, and so they're really happy that I'm here. But on the road, promoting our destination in various ways. I started, where's Mindy from Savannah? Oh, there you are, Mindy. My very first job was with the Savannah Convention and Visitors Bureau 30-plus years ago. Yes. So when you all went last year, I was kind of very envious and wishing that I was going to be able to go. But when you said that I'd been in the industry for 30 years, Fred said, oh, I've been in for 40 years, because he's 10 years older than me. And I'm like, duh, we know that. But in all seriousness, I mean, clearly our industry is extremely important, and it is a fun industry, but at the end of the day, it's economic development. And I think that gets lost in translation so many times, simply because folks hear that 2 weeks ago I was in India and last week I was in London, and I think I'm riding elephants and having tea with the Queen. And that's not quite what we're doing. It's fast moving, and it's tied to some of the key things in which Roger talked about earlier today. Now, the difficulty of following Roger is the reality that he you know, really talked on a lot of the priorities that I put forth or stated when the opportunity for me to come on as chairman was manifesting. As we look at our industry and the changing dynamics and things in which we have to focus on, the reality is that there are always going to be things in which we focus on Monday that we weren't focusing on Wednesday. So every day is a winding road, and we have to always remain involved and prepared. I'm kind of curious, how many board members of the U.S. Travel Association are actually here today? If you just... Yeah, so all in the front row. There you go. A couple of folks there. These are the bosses that send me information on a regular basis in terms of what the priorities are in this role as chair. You know, the reality is U.S. Travel Association is meeting all the needs of our industry, but there's always got to be that sacrificial person that allegedly tells Roger and his team what to do, and I guess in this particular case, it's me. And in that role, we do have a chance to talk about some of the priorities of our industry and things in which we should focus on. And you have a chance to be slightly selfish because, you know, you're thinking about your destination. So, you know, as I work with Christine Duffy and Cassandra Matei and Mike Dominguez, who are officers of the board, and Joe Lupano, who's the CEO of the Tampa Airport, who physically met me because I text him and say, hey, I'm in your hood. He came out. He said, where are you? I'm in line at Chick-fil-A. He came out and told me about all the changes to the Tampa St. Pete Airport, which I appreciated. But we take this role very seriously, even though we know that there's an amazing team that's in place. And Roger and all the folks that we work with are focusing on the needs of our industry. But there's always something that we feel that we should focus on. And what I did is I basically in a slide showed you some of the key things that are important to us. Policies and partnerships, expanding travel. I mean, clearly, that's the role of the U.S. Travel Association. I think that as we look at IPW, some of us, we get it diluted and think that the role of the U.S. Travel Association is to put on IPW. And quite frankly, we needed the U.S. Travel Association to facilitate IPW because there was no one else in that space. Fortunately for us, because of U.S. Travel, Brand USA exists now. So how do we continue to partner with them in terms of their role in helping us expand travel and navigate all the things that are difficulties for us as we focus on international and domestic travel, but specifically international travel coming to the U.S. and selfishly to our destination. So Brand USA and the reauthorization of Brand USA, you bet that was important to all of us. And so now as we're having this conversation, the question and the things in which we're asking of Roger and team is how do we focus on IPW playing a larger role in how do we focus on Brand USA playing a larger role in IPW, and how do we make sure that IPW circa 2021 and beyond looks different than what we did in 2019, 2020. I think it's time to implode it. I've been going for 10 years. I think it's a great show. But like every show that's out there, if we don't look at ourselves and say to an outsider, what should we do differently? How should we continue to make sure that the international community sees this as an important part of promoting our destination of the U.S. and wants to come to D.C. or see, there you go, wants to come to the U.S., then we're shooting ourselves in the foot. So we are challenging the team, and I know that Malcolm was here, and he is a part of this conversation, to not only look at partners that are in the space of putting on trade shows, but, you know, let's forget that. Let's look at, you know, what happens in Montreal with C2. I believe that's the right name, C2. Yes? No one knows it. That's a couple people in the back. It's because if you ever look at that, I encourage you to just go online and Google what they do in terms of the transformative ways in which they engage those that are attending. Let's look at Cirque du Soleil. You know, let's look at things that are unique and specific in terms of engaging people in a unique way that we need to incorporate in IPW. Because at the end of the day, we want those folks, when I'm in India, to say, well, maybe we'll send one person or two people to say, everyone needs to go because it's relevant and it's fun and it's exciting and it's engaging. So that's important to us. Welcoming the international traveler. I would say if I was talking to, well, I am talking amongst friends, but no one's recording right now, I'd say we suck. And I think that we need to really focus a lot more as a destination, as a community, and as a country, and welcoming travelers to our country. You know, Roger talked about the infrastructure. You know, it's embarrassing to sit in India or in London and for them to say, we go to our airports 3 hours in advance because we want to go shopping, because we like them. But when we come to the U.S., you guys, you know, you have no clue as to how bad your airports are. And I think that resonates simply because there's, you know, sometimes people talk about you and it's not true. And sometimes they talk about you and it's actually factual. And that's the reality here, is that we need to focus on our infrastructure simply because we've fallen too far behind. And one of the things Roger and I were talking about is what's the next step in terms of the PFC, working with the airlines and all the other variables that are tied to that. Plus, of course, all the other infrastructure that's associated with that. Making sure that what we do is clear. I know that Roger talked about what they're doing on the Hill on a regular basis. I've incorporated telling our own story into that dialogue when I'm meeting with City Council and other members, because again, they have this vision of me being in India for 2 weeks and enjoying it versus the fact that I was in three cities in 6 days traveling all over the country and then heading on to the next destination and focusing on what we do. I love it, but it's not necessarily what they perceive, and we need to focus on making sure that they understand the economic impact, the number of jobs that are created, and why it's important that we exist in our destinations. Diversity and inclusion. You know, one of the first things I said at the board meeting is simply because there's not been a lot of diversity at the U.S. Travel Association from a board level. And so here I am, the first person of color in a long time to be the chair. And I said, I bet you think I'm going to talk about diversity and inclusion because I'm a person of color. And, you know, they kind of looked and I'm like, well, I am. But let's just face it. If we're not focusing on diversity and inclusion and also opening that dialogue a little bit further beyond the fact that when I entered the industry way after Fred, but a long time ago, diversity was a person of color working in a convention bureau or particularly in this space. But now it's expanded to the LGBTQ community. It's expanded to people with disabilities. It's expanded beyond people of color, but people of color from different countries and understanding each other's unique differences, but most importantly, the things that make us similar. And as we talk, and I'm talking to a room full of CEOs and folks that run organizations for the U.S. Travel Association, the first thing you hear is that there's plenty of diversity. I said, well, let's look at that. You know, if there's a pyramid at this level, there's a lot of diversity. But as you get further up, that's not necessarily the case. And I don't expect everyone to see it through my lens. But it's important that we have that dialogue simply because we need to understand the workforce that is now the largest portion of the workforce in 2020, which are millennials and soon Generation Z, and understand that their priorities are much different than those who have been in the game for a long, long time and can't see beyond certain parameters. So we are having that conversation within U.S. Travel Association, but we're having it through a different lens because it's important and making sure that that resonates with the alphabet soup of organizations that exist. So I'm challenging you all and these meetings to also consider the importance and relevance of that simply because the international community, as they're traveling, they expect to see these things. They're further along than we are as a destination and as a country, and these are things that are important to us and important to them. Roger talked on a lot of these particular issues earlier today in terms of what we've got to focus on. You know, as you think along these lines, I think that some of the things that perhaps did not necessarily resonate that we've got to focus on, of course, trade wars, but also the impact of the U.S. becoming involved in international conflicts and how that affects international visitation. You know, as you talk about politics in China and you look at a word cloud, they're not necessarily reacting to the political climate in the U.S. for a variety of reasons. We don't have enough time to go into that. But if I go to another country, they're not coming to the U.S. because of some of these issues. They're not coming to the U.S. because some of the policies and things in which we're doing. So not only are we talking about come to our destinations because we're great, we have to play a large role in this messaging and making sure that we're a part of that conversation. Things like safety in America. You know, I can't tell you the number of times I've traveled, I've landed somewhere internationally, and then there was a mass shooting. And all of a sudden, instead of talking about how great my destination is or how great the U.S. is, I'm talking about safety in America. Is it safe? Do I walk down the street feeling unsafe living in an urban city like Washington, D.C.? So the narrative is important, our role is important, but we also have to recognize that these things play a huge role in why people consider not coming to our destination. Pandemics in a variety of ways. This was done well before what we're dealing with now. But as you can tell, as Roger said, I mean, you know, the cynic in me says, if you listen to the data that Roger shared with you today, in terms of the number of people that die from the flu every year in the U.S., that's just the U.S. So just look, Google, and figure out how many people die from the flu in China. It doesn't mean that what we're dealing with is not relevant, but what it means is that you should have standard practices in place that you're communicating on a regular basis about sanity and about sanity, about about cleanliness, maybe sanity too, and other things that are extremely important simply because we work and we travel a lot. We're always in places, closed environments, whereas, quite frankly, it's a petri dish to be in a plane. And you're in a convention center. I was in our convention center this weekend with the auto show. Thousands of people walking around. We should have standards in place that are above and beyond what the media and what we're focusing on right now with neurovirus. So, as we look at and visa issues, I know Roger didn't talk about it earlier. I think I'm preaching to the people that deal with this on a regular basis. Again, the number one reason or issue in terms of selling destinations like Washington, if I'm in a room like this internationally and I ask how many people have been to Washington, I know that maybe 20% will raise their hand. If I ask the same question about New York, San Francisco, and other destinations, more raise their hand. I think that there are perceptions of our destination that we have to overcome on a regular basis that play a huge role. And then on top of that, they're saying, as a person that is responsible for planning or bringing people to the U.S., I can't even get a visa. So how do you expect me to talk about going to the U.S. when my experience has been negative as a whole? So there are things in which the U.S. Travel Association has to focus on and working with the federal government, and there have been some positives. Roger mentioned, and I didn't mention it earlier, working with the National Park Service. You know, one of the first things that Kathy said, as well as some of her peers, is that we've got to true up our relationship with the National Park Service. Right in my backyard and the bane of my existence. You know, I'm an urban environment. New York is an urban environment. Washington, D.C. has over 80 national parks. Anytime someone says, including IPW, that we want to do something on a national mall, I need a pint of whiskey or bourbon, simply because it's not an easy organization to work with. And as Roger said, thank goodness we had a breakthrough meeting recently in Washington to talk about the experiences in urban environments as well as other parts of the U.S., which are extremely important. So now, as I click, there you go. Now, as we look at some of the changes and things in which we have to deal with as a destination and as a country, there is going to be a brain trust that I have the pleasure of calling to the stage to, I can ask them questions, anything I want, plus some of the questions that were specifically sent to me in regards to some of the topics that were just mentioned. So I'm going to welcome Fred Dixon, Steve Hayes, Nick Henschel, and Kathy Ritter to the stage. So good morning. And let's start by you each introducing yourselves and just to, and maybe a little bit of your background, and just to make it a little fun, if you were a sports star in 2020, what would that sport be? And what, because I said something earlier, I'm throwing them off, Kathy's mad at me now. What would that sport be and what would you want to, what would you do as a sports star? We'll start with you, sir.
Good morning, everyone. Nick Henschel from ATI, American Tours International. I thought we were going to give our background, Elliot. That's
that
it.
Too, a little bit. Just a little bit.
Well, I've been in the industry for just over 35 years as well. In all seriousness, I grew up in the industry. The business is a family business that was founded by my mother, Noelle, in 1977. So we're celebrating our 42nd anniversary of bringing America to the world, as we say. And I have been in a kind of full-time capacity for the past 7 years with the company, and have had the pleasure of leading a really great team over those years that it works with all of you. And so I'm excited to be here to speak about, I guess, to be part of the Brain Trust, which is, it's a pleasure to be here. And in terms of sports star you want, or a sport that we would, well, I really need to get better at my golf game, so I guess I'm going to say golf and, I mean, Tiger Woods. Is that, that's who I'd like to try and not ever get as good as, so.
All right. I heard he lives down the street, so yeah, that might be an opportunity for you. Awesome. Thanks, Nick. Fred.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone. I'm Fred Dixon. I am younger than Elliot, so don't listen to what he says. He's the older one. But it's a pleasure to be here, and it's nice to be back with this family. My career started in many ways with RSA. I can say that, right? RSA back in the day, and a lot of my Tennessee peeps are here. I grew up in the industry, too, like Nick. My mom is still the general manager of our family business, which is a motel, not a hotel. Motel with an M in Gatlinburg, Tennessee. She just celebrated 51 years as the general manager there. So I was born and like came home from the hospital there. And I remember being 5 years old and the buzzer would ring and I'd have to go show a room or I'd have to go deliver towels. Or God forbid, I had to unclog a toilet. But that's how you learn, right? And we all have done that and it makes us better people. So I grew up in the industry, and it's a real honor and a pleasure to get to do what I do every day, working with MIC and company. And I would be remiss if I didn't use this time to let everyone know today is Makiko's 50th birthday. So you all need to help me celebrate her a little bit later. She's our warrior on the road. And, of course, I would be a football star if I were going to, you know, play a sport. I'd play
Tennessee
football.
Titans?
Tennessee Titans. Yeah, go Vols. No, you know I would not play football.
Oh, you have one.
Okay, so I got my job by a complete stroke of fortune. How many people in this room knew Donna Shaw from the Illinois Bureau of Tourism? I figured there might be a few. Donna Shaw is the person who told me that I should set things in motion to become the state tourism director after her. And here's why. I had been a state house reporter, an investigative reporter who ultimately found my way into state government communications. I ended up in the office of a constitutional officer who ended up getting elected governor. I was his speechwriter, travel staff, press release handler, press conference handler, wrote his campaign position papers. And I ultimately ended up as a spokesperson in the governor's office and then moved over to the Economic Development Agency where I met Donna. She was completely frustrated with our new economic development director and said, you should go for it. That was my start to tourism. So I'm here by complete accident. I ended up with at that time, a $60 million state budget, the second largest in the country. We had top flight agencies. I had mentors at Edelman Public Relations. Kathleen Johnson is sitting in this room. She was one of those mentors. Thank you, Kathleen. And Footcone and Belding and BBDO Chicago taught me from my start. So that was my start in tourism. And then I got, again, lucky getting hired in Colorado. So I would say any phase of women's athletics today, I would be honored to be in because this is an incredibly exciting time for women's athletics. But my sport is golf. I'm older than all of you guys. But I went to high school at a time when there wasn't Title IX. There were no women's sports. I was never taught to play anything. So when I got out of college, I took golf lessons. That's my sport. I love hitting the golf ball. I would love to be a women's professional golfer. And I shoot pretty consistently, 90-ish. So I'm not awful, but not ready for the pro tour.
Good morning. Steve Hayes, President and CEO of Visit St. Pete Clearwater. So I'm figuring out 35 years in the business, paid, had 2 years before that as an intern. This is my fourth job that I'm in now. All of it's been in the DMO world, and I got my start in that tourism mecca that I'm sure everyone has been to at some point in their life, Peoria, Illinois. So, but I have had 25 years in Tampa. The last seven has been in Pensacola, Florida, up in Northwest Florida, and I'm on week six here. So again, it's a business, it's an industry that I am truly passionate about, and talk about seeing changes and how we do things, incredible. Talking about sports, I'm really torn because I'm a huge hockey fan, but I'm also a huge soccer fan. And I like both of those games because they play continuously. They don't stop. So, you know what? I'm going to go with hockey just because those guys grit it out every day, 80 games. They just beat each other up. They'll fight over no reason. And I'm going to have to go with my star if I'm going to be that, play that game and be that person. I'm going to have to go with Cooch from the Tampa Bay Lightning, who's last year's scoring leader. Guy's awesome.
Good stuff. I see each of you in those respective roles. So we're happy to be here. So inbound travel, very important, especially international. Ladies first. Kathy, as you look at the importance of this industry, what do you see some of the biggest things in which we have to focus on, and what are you all doing as you're looking at inbound travel coming to Colorado as a destination?
Yeah, I'm going to speak from this from the perspective of a tertiary international destination. We're not New York. We're not Washington, D.C. So we have really been on a path of becoming far more strategic about who we're talking to. And so I think in many destinations, I think many state destinations and even city destinations have, you know, been happy to accept whatever international traveler showed up at the door. And we have become a lot more targeted about where we want to spend our money and the kind of traveler that we want to attract to our doors. Just in terms of making those, so we're being more and more specific, I would have to say. And that means more and more research. We just found out 4 years ago that Australia was our number two overseas market. That had been anecdotal information in our state because we had no inbound, we had no nonstop flight from Australia. We had no inbound traveler information from Australia. So we had overlooked that extremely important market. And so we're being far more strategic these days about who we're targeting. We're targeting high spend, high growth markets. And we're leaving the others to come as they will. And we're also, within those markets, becoming very specific about who we want to talk to in those markets, because we can't market to France. You know, for us, it's talking to the travelers who are coming in on the nonstop Norwegian flight from Paris to Denver. And that is the highest opportunity for us. So for us, it's really sifting through and finding the highest opportunities and then using that as the leverage point to attract others from that country or others who are like-minded. Now we're in the fortunate position of having three nonstop Norwegian flights. Anyway, so those are the kinds of things I think we just have to be mindful of. Strategy, strategy, strategy.
Fair enough. Anyone else want to tackle that? Cut. Okay. So, you know, as we're, you know, I was listening to some of the things that Roger was saying earlier, and clearly as we think about the neurovirus and how it potentially affects travel to the U.S., I want to ask Fred, but I'm going to ask generally, as you all are listening and engaging and having to control the narrative, as a destination or an organization, what are you all doing? And what advice can you give those in the audience in terms of what we're dealing with as a and from a global perspective? There you go, Kathy. Pass the mic. I like that.
I think the tough part about this is the unknown. And the unknown not only from our perspective. I mean, the update from Roger was incredible just to hear that. But as he said, this is on, he was on version 6. So imagine you are in another country and you're waiting to hear about what might be happening. And if you take the coronavirus just as one example, it could have been something else. It's that dissemination of information and how factual it is. And then do we even have that the ability to change any of those minds. And so I'm going to take it to another step here for us. And I was not here during this time period, but I know that the team here at Visit St. Pete Clearwater did a fabulous job of informing travelers about red tide. And, you know, again, people that are watching the media and they're seeing something totally different than what is here, but yet on the same thing, you got to be factual about it. And so it's being able to get that factual information out. And that's where I think it's extremely important to work collaboratively. You can't do that on your own. I sat in a meeting just about 2 weeks ago as a follow-up to Red Tide and the different entities that were around the table that all brought those things to light to help put the right message out there. And when I say right, the correct message out there, I think it was important. And we were talking to a U.S. congressman. So it's important that we do this collaboratively. And then I think in the destination marketing world, if our brothers and sisters are also going through that, is that we work collaboratively to tell that correct message as well.
If I could, from a inbound operator perspective, you know, there's not much a destination or a company like ourselves can do in a situation like this other than, you know, disseminate information that's accurate and keep calm and really work with our suppliers on, you know, as cancellations come in, which is happening now and will continue to happen from China and from other impacted areas. In our view, we're diversified in terms of the source markets that we work in and bring visitors from all over. It does happen. The timing of this was incredibly bad, right? I mean, it was right before, it broke out right before the Chinese New Year started. And so not only did you have the potential for people who were infected to go and travel, and they did. I think it's the largest mass movement of people in the world every year is Chinese New Year. But they, the dependence in the first quarter, which in a lot of American destinations is a struggle, is often on the Chinese passenger visiting for the Chinese New Year. So now that that's going to be a lot, that's going to be lost. It is concerning, I'm sure, for suppliers and destinations. So from our perspective, we've already seen some, I'd say, movement from groups, for example, that were in China that can no longer go to China. Rather, they were coming from like the UK and Europe to visit. They're now coming to the US, a destination that they, you know, have confidence that they're going to be okay in. And so there is, I hate to say it, but there's some, you know, upside in that sense. But, you know, we just, I think, have to speak, you know, honestly to each other, collaborate, as you say, about what we can do to kind of counteract the impact, because there will be an impact. We're already feeling it. And as I said, you know, a diversified company or destination that's not as reliant on one source market is in a better position. So maybe that's the lesson. And hopefully it doesn't become a true global pandemic.
Okay. Now, Fred, before you answer, as a major U.S. destination, there's always this sense, I know I get it, and I'm sure you get it often, that they want us to talk about it. They want us to have a narrative, not necessarily, well, they want us to control the narrative and make them feel better, make our members feel better about the potential impact. So, you know, as you're flying back to New York today, for a variety of reasons, what does a city like New York do, and what will your message be to manage that narrative?
That's a good question. And, you know, there are three cases being tested right now in New York. We expect to have the results tomorrow from the CDC, and it's likely that these may be the ones, the first cases that we'll have in New York. We're fortunate. We have one in New York. We have a great community. We have a very tight travel industry. Many of them are here today that have worked together for many, many years and are very supportive of each other. And we've been through this before. You know, we went through swine flu. We've been through SARS. We had Ebola in New York. And, you know, thank the doctor who was doing the work in Africa, he came home, he did just what we want tourists to do. He walked the High Line while he was infectious with Ebola. He walked the High Line, he went to Bowlmore in Brooklyn, he dined out at the meatball shop. He did all the great things that we wanted him to do, and he was tweeting about it. Well, he didn't know he was infected. But it's this kind of messaging that we really have to deal with. And so the message, and Nick said it just a second ago, is to the industry and to our members, it's first of all, remain calm, right? I mean, the size of, and the scale of this is unknown yet at the moment. We're lucky in New York to have a tremendous, I think, probably the best health department in the country. They deal with these kinds of issues on a massive scale every day. And we have the hospitals to manage these situations properly as well. Ebola was contained in New York at Bellevue, and the guy completely recovered. He's back practicing again, and there were no spread. There was no issues at all. We're hoping that's going to be the same situation with the coronavirus, although it is larger. What we do with our members is it is all about information and making sure that the right information is getting out in an appropriate manner, because it's the unknown that's the scariest part. So we have been constantly messaging. We sent out updates to our membership last week. I'm sending emails again yesterday. I'm going back tonight, and we'll be meeting with the city and finding out the latest information this evening and tomorrow morning. We'll probably be communicating again because the results should be back tomorrow. The biggest question is really, what is the traveling public going to say? Is New York safe to visit? Is going to be the biggest question, and the answer is yes. At this moment, based on what we know, this situation is safe. These three people are the only three that we know at the moment, and they are in quarantine in hospital. So it's about keeping the calm. It's about sharing the information that you have at the moment and keeping the updates flowing and addressing the media inquiries from overseas. Everyone, as Elliot says, wants to make this a huge story. And it is about holding back on that, making sure that we're not feeding the fire and we're not adding oxygen to it, but that we're keeping the messaging contained and keeping the thought process rational. Yeah.
So, Steve, as you look at your new role at this amazing destination, we've all been listening to and been engaged as to what's happening or not happening with Visit Florida. So, you know, you're now in the world of destination marketing. With a situation like this, with the virus and with the concern, I would imagine in Washington, China is the number one market for us. A lot of us, we see China as probably one of the largest international inbound markets. Do you see an opportunity, and because there's always an opportunity to say to the state legislators that here is another reason why Visit Florida is extremely important to our mission as a destination, as a state, in terms of promoting tourism to Florida?
So I look at it, I don't care what the situation is. If it involves the whole state, there needs to be an organization that can speak on behalf of the industry. So when it was Red Tide working with the individual communities, Visit Florida was there. When it came down to hurricanes over the last couple of years, Visit Florida was there. So they play a role that is very critical and very important to what we do in getting messaging out. If they weren't around, who takes up that lead role? Who is that one? Because otherwise you're now dependent upon the destination organizations in various locations to have that. And based on resources, some may not be able to do that. And you know, and quite honestly, a major destination may not be help supporting a minor destination. So that's where Visit Florida is extremely important. I think our elected officials sometimes lose sight of that. They're so, you know, we've talked so much about the advertising and the marketing. You know, you talk about, you know, you're going to a trip, but bottom line is on those trips, you're talking about messaging, and the state plays a critical role in that. And so we're hopeful that the legislators will see again the value of that organization to reauthorize it and fund it, because the industry here has been solidly behind what they're doing.
Fair enough. So Nick, as you look at all of us that are on this panel, at the end of the day, we all want to be your friend. We want you to have a good perception of our destinations. We want all of you to influence and engage business to come to different places in the U.S. If there was one thing that you'd like to share, just one, with us in terms of what you'd like us to do differently in terms of engaging you and your peers that are in the audience, what would that be?
Well, first I would say you want us to be your friend, you also want our customers to be your friend, right? So we need to collaborate together to reach our customer, you know, the international travel agent, the international U.S. specialist that is really promoting the destination alongside us. We develop and operate the product. They sell the product. So that's really what I would ask for is closer collaboration between the destination with the inbound operator really at the center, and then our customers being the ones who are actually engaging in the sale of the destination and choosing based on the product that we create and how we operate it, choosing the holiday that the end consumer will end up traveling to. So collaboration and, you know, well, you only asked for one. I'm sounding like Joe Biden right now, but I'm going to give it back to you.
All right. You can give another one if you'd like.
No, I think, you know, we've been navigating successfully also working with Brand USA. And so this is also part of the equation for us as an inbound operator, working with destinations and Brand USA, bringing that all together. I think we are in a unique position knowing, first of all, being able to actually create the product and operate it, and then knowing the trade in markets all over the world and how what they need, what they would appreciate in terms of support. And so it's actually more of the same, really. But there are still, you know, I know a lot of destinations have pushed anything print by the wayside. They don't think it's of value. There are some markets that it still is valuable in. And so thinking through some of those, obviously, you know, investment in digital makes more and more sense, but thinking through some of the requirements that that customers still have that are the kinds of customers that you want to come visit your destination, and supporting us and our customers to do that would be something I would advocate for.
Okay. Fair enough. Absolutely.
Yeah, I was going to say, and also I think, you know, speaking about the virus, I mean, we're going to have a huge opportunity once this thing gets sorted, right? There's a lot of pent-up demand in China already from the trade war sort of tensions, which have sort of dampened travel to a small degree. And now they're sitting at home in many cases, not going out. They're on their phones. That's why we're trying to put up really cool content on Weibo and WeChat at the moment to keep them entertained while they're sitting at home waiting to come back out. And guess what they're doing? They're thinking about getting out of there. And they're thinking about traveling. They're going to think about getting back on a plane and starting to check off their bucket list. So that's where people like Nick come in helpful, is that we need to make sure that the lights come back up on, come on again, right? As soon as this is over, the U.S. is back in there in a big way. We're poised to go back in as New York. Makiko, we were the first ones into Japan after the Fukushima. I think she radiated me, actually, Makiko. I still blame her for that. But there is a lot to be said about going right back in to the marketplace, right? I mean, there's huge potential. We all know it. And so I think the partnerships and collaboration is a great example of how we as the U.S. need to be poised for when this ends. We don't have a crystal ball. We don't know when that's going to be. We've seen new bookings in the last couple of days for May out of China. So some people are being optimistic already. You know, groups are canceling now, of course, but these flights are going to come back on, and the groups are going to be coming back, and we have a huge opportunity to maybe even recover some of this business.
Good point. And to that point, I'm spending a week last week in London with our meetings team. You know, the reality is there are a lot of meetings that were going to go to China that are now looking for other places to go. What they're also saying to us is because of the political climate, they're looking at Canada. But the reality is that there is a cause and effect to everything, and we never want something bad to happen anywhere in the world, but at the same time, we recognize the opportunities and engage in an appropriate way to be there to help. You know, I saw a lot of hotel companies that basically said, I'm overwhelmed with calls because I had meetings that were going to China that are looking to go elsewhere. Selfishly, I wanted to say, well, call me. And I wouldn't do that, but I would also say that, hey, we're here to help here to help if we can, and that's something that we all have to think about. You know, as a destination, as quiet as it's kept, anytime something bad is good for DC, when the car industry, automotive industry was going through what they were going through 12 years ago, guess who was coming to Washington and staying in hotels? Now, I'm not going to promote that, but that's the reality, and I think that we have to look at it from both sides of the spectrum, simply because we have to be there to, we don't want to be poachers and be inappropriate, but we also have to look at opportunities that exist because of that.
Yeah, and I'll just add to that. I think there's a huge opportunity for the U.S. this year. I mean, if you look at, you know, we were just with some media in the U.K. as well, and they were pointing out that you said, you know, the Brits love to go to Sharm el-Sheikh because of the beaches and the sun. Can't really do that right now because of the tensions in the Middle East. They like to go to Australia. You've got the wildfires. They can't go to Hong Kong because of the disruption and the protests that are ongoing there. And so they say, you know what? The U.S. looks actually like a pretty good option. The U.S. is a safe option. We know the destination's there. You speak our language. So I think there actually is a big opportunity for us if we can get through this virus situation. Hopefully, it's going to be contained. And the USA is can actually, I think, benefit, and not that we want to benefit at anyone's unfortune, but we also are all in the business of doing business. So I think there is an upside to this year. We're poised to take advantage of that in New York and make sure that we are welcoming. It's why our welcoming message is so important as a nation, that people know that the U.S. is a safe destination and that we have a lot to offer. Whatever you're looking for in the world, you'll find in the U.S.
Fair enough. So let's kind of change the conversation a little bit and talk about my favorite S word, sustainability. Something that in the U.S. we talk about a lot, but we're really not prepared, especially as we look at the global community. From the mice market perspective, that's a totally different story. We're way behind the curveball, but as a leisure destination, I'm kind of curious from both ends, from the promoting our destinations to Nick, from your perspective, what's being asked as we are welcoming or looking at international visitors coming to our destinations?
Well, I think everyone, large companies and small alike, want to portray that they are engaging in sustainability. And we, for a long time, this has been, at least in Europe, it has been the case. It's becoming obviously more of a important factor here in the U.S., and I guess the question is to what degree that's lip service and to what degree that's actually real. There's small things from a tour operator perspective that we can do, that we are doing, and of course we view bringing a group of on an escorted tour of 50 passengers on a motor coach to a destination is more sustainable. We can work with the destination to go into the to the areas that they want us to at the times that they want us to. And of course, that wouldn't be as sustainable if we had, 10 passengers on a motor coach. So it actually is in line with what we desire for our business, which is to have better loads, as we call them, for escorted tours. Little things like not using single-use water bottles that the bus drivers typically like to pass out and stopping that practice. And so there's little things that we can do, I think, in terms of actually, the threat that Roger spoke to about travel becoming questioned by whether leisure, travel is, well, truly a luxury and something that, behaviors change as a result of flight shaming or whatnot. My perspective on that is that travel is so essential to living, to engaging, and to becoming a prosperous society together across borders, that it's worth some of the cost. Yes, we need to try and reduce the cost by becoming more efficient, creating new technologies. But to stop a practice that I think is kind of rooted in modern humanity, to me is silly. So that's kind of the very specific and the very kind of high level.
I would say that there is some. If anyone is thinking that this is just a passing moment in history, that people are just caring about sustainability for a bit, they're wrong. Because you have, and when you start looking at the generational shift that is happening around this issue, many baby boomers don't think it's a big deal. Gen Z thinks it's a huge deal. The millennials think it's a huge deal. Those are the travelers of the future, and they're saying today it matters. I'm looking at this as one of those major disruptors in our industry, and we have to adapt to it. Destination Analysts just did a major study about the impact of our people's beliefs around sustainability, which was mirroring what we were doing on a microcosm in Colorado. 3 years ago, only 15% of people thought it was important and their choice of destination sustainability practices was important. It went to 20% the next year. Last summer, it was 27%. Said a destination sustainability practices was very important to their choice of a destination. What can we do about it? You know, Roger touched on some interesting things. My own personal belief is that we've got to make it easy for travelers to do the right thing because they'll gravitate to the places where it's easy to do the right things. One of the things we're working on in Colorado is electrifying all 26 of our scenic byways. Petra, it's an idea I stole from Oregon. All six of Oregon's byways already are electrified, but now with the increasing availability of electric vehicles, it's going to be very easy for an international traveler who cares about these things, for a domestic traveler who cares about these things, to fly in to Denver, rent an electric vehicle, and travel all over our state without leaving a carbon impact. We have two of the seven cities in the United States that are 100% powered by renewable energy. So the message to a traveler is you can go to any attraction, stay in any hotel, eat at any restaurant in Aspen and Glenwood Springs, and you can travel carbon free. Those are going to be increasingly powerful messages, and more of us need to be saying it. We need to be sincere about it. Once we start saying those things, we're in a glass house. And so, you know, we cannot be subject to hypocrisy alerts. You know, we have to be sincere. And the word for that is greenwashing. You don't want to be accused of greenwashing. So once you start down this road, it has to be with a full heart and pure intentions. So good luck, everyone. It's a tough road.
No, it's really important, and we launched a new partnership with the Climate Week, which is the largest climate action event that happens in the world. It's every September at the United Nations at the General Assembly in New York, and we have a new partnership with them now that really is centered around education, primarily for the business community, for our members, about sustainable practices. There is a lot that we can do as an industry, to Kathy's point, and I really admire the programs that Colorado has put in place. I think your Leave No Trace program is one of my favorite ideas. But there's so much that we can do as businesses, and particularly in food waste. I mean, there is so much that goes on in our industry, and so just bringing education. So we all have a responsibility, I think, to share that burden, to bring education to others and to our communities, and we've been doing that with the Climate Group in New York. It's a long road, to Kathy's point, but this is a road that we're going to be on for a while. It's not going away. And I think the flight shaming thing could potentially be an existential threat to our industry in long term. So I mean, we have to think about diversifying our marketplace. You know, we are committed to international. New York's still the most popular international destination, and I don't want that to change. But people are thinking differently. I mean, Greta did take a boat from Sweden to New York to speak at the United Nations General Assembly. So there are going to be new ways of thinking. I think we have to stay adaptive. I think we have to stay alert. I was happy to hear Roger talk about it. I think, you know, acknowledging the problem is the first step, and then making sure that we're all focused on it and doing what we can as industries to encourage sound policy and practices amongst our members, but then also advocate for travelers to do those things while they're in your community. And it's not just walking on a trail in Colorado, it's walking around the city of New York. When we hosted World Pride last summer, 5 million people came, and it was the largest Pride event ever in the history of the planet. And we were really fortunate to have this new partnership at Climate Week in place, and we had a whole sustainability initiative encouraging people to be mindful of the environment while they were in our city. Leave no trace behind. And I think the community appreciates that. I think we in tourism, we haven't talked about that, Elliot, but you know, the impact of over-tourism, quote unquote, and I hate that word, on the communities.
Tourism,
responsible tourism, yeah. Exactly, I think. And so it plays into this, because I think, you know, they don't want, you know, visitors coming into the community and having a negative impact. So it's beholden to us and our futures to take this very seriously.
And I just want to add a couple more comments about this. We have seen the market response from all kinds of countries to what we're doing in Colorado. We had a Chinese television crew coming in asking to translate our video into Chinese, I mean into Mandarin. I spoke in Mexico. I mean, these are not countries that you think would care deeply about sustainability, but they are seeing the consumer reaction themselves, and they're wanting to learn more. And I think it behooves us all to figure out how to make this happen.
If I might add, come back at it from a different perspective. I'm going to call upon my Pensacola experience. We had a major beach event up there, and one of the negatives from the local community was how trashed the beach was at the end. But it took going through to the event organizers and saying, we know you are spending lots of money here, we know that you're having a great time here, but this is the downside. And what happened is, over a very short period of time, working with them and the folks that go there and the local community, you had a beach that was spotless after the fact. And so is that, you know, do we, being in the destination organization role, have a responsibility now to communicate with the locals as well as the visitor about respecting our natural resources? Because, you know, I think Roger said it, you know, not only do I want my kids, but I want their kids to be able to enjoy what I enjoy. And if we don't take care of it, we're not going to have it. And so how do we get that messaging out? And it's not been our role to do that. But now we have to do it to protect that. That helps bring people back to our community, but also gets support of the local community.
No, you're absolutely right. And I will say that, you know, to the collective audience that, you know, in the, you know, there are clearly two facets to our industry meetings and the leisure market. The meetings market is basically making a decision not to meet in destinations if they don't have a sustainability practice that's actually real. And I would challenge you all, as I've challenged our destination and your membership, to understand the dynamic of that, because it's going to start filtering more in the, you know, in terms of the international leisure traveler. Kathy mentioned, you know, millennials and Generation Z. Those are domestic. Those are folks that live in the U.S. that have these expectations. But wait until you hear what's happening in international countries. And, you know, ours pales in comparison. And as you look at all the reasons as to why individuals may choose not to come to the U.S., this will be one of those, if you're not really focusing on it and paying attention to it, holding your local governments, state governments accountable, and making sure that there's an actual plan that makes sense, because it will potentially affect international travel to the U.S. So, last question.
If I could just add, what's really interesting is also to think about the destinations themselves. So we're talking about sustainability, but a destination like Las Vegas is, you know, growing and is a core destination for us, or Dubai internationally. So this is what's going to be really interesting if that does occur, if there is truly a generational shift in thinking about where you visit and whether it's sustainable, whether those types of destinations that are kind of built in mirages, essentially, right, are going to remain as popular as they are today.
And they're the ones that have the best opportunity to rebound, because everything is relatively new in Vegas. I mean, it changes on a dime. They have, you know, they have the resources, whereas our destinations are a couple of centuries old, and it's a lot harder to a certain extent. I think that there is more of an expectation on a city like Vegas and Orlando, whereas the infrastructure and destination is relatively new, to be able to put in standards a lot faster than some others. But very good point. Last question, how can we strengthen IATA through collaboration? That's the hardest question. What?
Lisa, you did this one, didn't you?
I didn't think about it.
Yeah. Nick, you have the microphone. Go ahead. How about everyone think about it and maybe close with answering?
Yeah, I mean, I think I spoke to it a little bit before. It's more engagement. We'd like to see, I think, your fellow destinations, more of you here at all levels, right? So it's really encouraging that the top levels from some of our top destinations are here today and to engage with members. So I think, you know, it's and it is about open communication and collaboration on how we really support the customers that can drive the business, I guess, is the best way to describe it. And of course, I feel like those are our customers, right? More so than the end consumer that you're you know, trying to get to through other channels. So listening to that, listening to what our perspective is on how you can drive that business to both your destination and through us, the members, would be my answer.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
You know, I would say that Gary outlined an incredible example of collaboration not too long ago with the National Park Service. And what started as a protest about increased fees ended up into a solutions-based approach. You guys are the experts, you know, so you know the solutions. And the solution that you offered ultimately ended up being pretty much adopted because you knew the right answers. And so this is a room full of experts. And I would say think about those collaborations that you need to make to solve the problems that you have. And instead of, you know, bringing a protest, bring a solution. Because you guys know what the right solution is. And find those partners who can help you support. You know, as a state tourism office, if you tell me as a member of the Western States Tourism Policy Council, as a member of U.S. Travel Association, if you bring me a solution I can support, I'll help you. And so will lots of other people.
Yeah, and I'll just say, I'll try to make mine quick. The Steps to Success program that IITA has, it is to me, I think, the secret to collaboration. You know, we developed a program in New York, Tourism Ready, which in some ways is a model for this. And Jen, thank you again for the gift that keeps on giving in New York, because it really is about growing this group, growing its influence, and growing the importance of the international inbound market. And Nick said it, it's about creating those relationships and building the product. And if we don't have the product to sell, then we're going to get outbid by other destinations, or they're going to make other choices. So it is about building the tent. And I think Steps to Success is a great way to do it. As destinations, if you don't know about it, see Jen Ackerson or Lisa after the program. But it's about bringing this message of the role of the international inbound operators and the international travelers into communities across the country. And it will build small businesses. That's what we've done in New York. We've taken it into the neighborhoods across all five boroughs. We've made it free training for small businesses to learn about tourism, learn about the importance of it, learn what is an international inbound operator, what is a receptive, what is a DMC, what is a group rate, what is an FIT, because guess what? It's those experiences that the travelers are looking for. And so it's incumbent upon us to help bring that product to the table, and Steps to Success is a great way to do it. So that's what I would say.
And I'll close it out from this standpoint, and I'm going to use this example, and Tracy Vaughn is here, who's now in Fort Lauderdale, but Tracy used to be in Tallahassee to visit Florida, went to Georgia, and we were at IPW, and she said, "Hey, Steve," and I'm in Pensacola, and she's like, "Listen, in talking to some of the operators that are bringing in business, you know, I really want to position Northwest Florida to be that beach destination." As Northwest Florida International was, I mean, other than ATI, was very small. So it was a way for us to get exposure in a market and to an audience that we wouldn't have had otherwise. So I think the opportunity is, how can you pair up with larger destinations, with smaller destinations? Because the overall intent is, how do we increase the international traveler? If we can grow that market by introducing smaller markets and a vast, rich experience, at the end, we're all going to benefit. And so, again, I think we have a length of stay to work with that is good. It's just called sharing, and it will happen. If I'm a first-time visitor to the U.S. and I'm international, and I'm coming to Florida, I'm going to Disney. I'm not going to change that. It's the one that's been 10 times. That's the one that I want, and that's the one I'm going to get here. And the one that's coming for 15 times, how can I share it with someone from Pensacola?
Fair enough. It's appropriate for our host to have the last word. With that, I want to say to Gary Garrett, thank you all for your confidence in me hosting or to moderate this panel. Very good subject. Lisa, thank you for all your support and making sure that all of us are on point to meet the needs of all of you. I hope that has been the case in terms of things in which we've talked about. If I think I know you're going to be here for the whole meeting, so since you live here. So Kathy will be here the rest of the week. Nick, you'll be here the rest of the week. I know that Fred's leaving, so if you have any specific questions or things, now would be the time to ask Fred. I'll be here through tomorrow. All of this is extremely important to all of our destinations, you know, I think that at the end of the day, the good news is that the global community still holds travel to the U.S. in high regard. You know, we still have to focus on things that might influence or change their opinion, but if you ask at the end of the day, when they go down the laundry list of reasons why they may not travel in 2020, they're still wanting to come to the U.S. as a destination. So that's the good news for us. I think there are a lot of issues in which we're going to have to focus on. I know the U.S. Travel Association will be in lockstep with a lot of other organizations that play a role in travel to the U.S. because it's important to us all. So sorry that I did not dress appropriately for the white party last night, but I dressed appropriately for Florida, I thought. So, you know, just close your eyes and pick stuff out of your closet. So with that, I think we will turn it back over to Garrett. And thank you. Jordy. So thank you all very much. And Jordy.
Well, I'm sure you're all hungry. I am. So we're going to do an outdoors lunch today so we can enjoy some of the sunlight. But before we go, we would like to introduce the two sponsors for the lunch, which is Wyndham Hotels and Resorts and IPW Powered by U.S. Travel. So please join me in welcoming Paul Mason by Wyndham.
Oh.
So we have Ruth Mensch with IPW. Welcome.
Thank you. That's okay. We didn't want to get the slides out of order. Paul's got a big slideshow for you, not me. Thank you. I just want to say thank you to Lisa Simon and the IITA team for being able to be here again this year and co-sponsoring lunch with Paul of Wyndham Hotels and Resorts. Thank you, Paul. Also, thank you to Brand USA. They're coming back again in 2020 as the premier sponsor again of IPW. We're really excited about that, and that partnership continues, of course. And most importantly, thank you to all of the receptive operator community here. You're a big part of why IPW has been so successful. We just hit a milestone birthday. You never tell a milestone birthday for a woman, Fred. And Fred is younger than IPW, just for the record. But as Elliot was mentioning also in his presentation as our chairman of U.S. Travel, of the chairman of the board, after a milestone birthday, oftentimes you dive deep, you look for ways to stay relevant and stay fresh for the next 50 years. So with that, we conducted a lot of focus groups. We did a lot of interviews with stakeholders, with our attendees. We really used our advisory board a lot, put them in overdrive. And we're excited to announce a few of the enhancements that we're rolling out in Las Vegas this year. And what better place in Las Vegas to feel young and fresh again, right? So I'm going to show you a couple slides of what we have in store. I have the clicker. We did not rehearse this, in case you can't tell. So we have the IPW Express booths this year for the first time. We hear many times that IPW is expensive. I'm not sure if I'm ready to jump and get my own booth, get my own appointments. So this is for first-time exhibitors. You can see it's kind of small, but you do get a set of appointments. It's less than a normal booth set. So it's, I believe it's 20 appointments. And it's only for one attendee, but it's a packaged booth, comes with the registration and the booth. It's a much lower cost. It's really an entry point to get new people into IPW, or if you were a booth share in the past and you're looking to get your own set of appointments. So we're really excited to roll this out for Las Vegas and see how the concept goes. Kind of broadening and diversifying. In addition to that, we're also excited to announce IPW Focus. We have heard a lot that education is very important. We don't want to take away from the importance of our appointments, and that will not happen. But on the exhibit hall floor, we're going to have two arenas, if you will, for some of the educational sessions. One will be set up in the Marketing and Technology Pavilion. These will be our marketing and technology sponsors that will be engaging mostly exhibitors, but of course buyers are welcome to attend if they have a free appointment. They're going to be lined up exactly with the appointment time, so 20 minutes. And then we'll have another education area, which will be for all attendees, also on the exhibit hall floor, that will be talking more about sustainability, kind of some of what you heard the panel speaking about today. Some of those issues, we'll be diving in deep with that. And Brand USA will also be presenting in there. And then finally, we heard a lot after the Visit California's Plaza in Anaheim that our attendees really want more time to engage each other. So we're creating a little bit more fun in our main lounges on the exhibit hall floor. These will be set up where you can have more engaging conversations. We think maybe sometimes people might have been napping in there. So we're going to try to make that a little bit more interactive. And then also our lunches. The beginning part of lunches, it's usually dark and there's a lot of loud music playing, 6,500 people. We're turning on the lights. We're turning down the music. We're going to let everybody have some conversation, meet your table mates, engage more, and then we'll start the productions. So this is all of... Okay, good. I'm glad you like that. So this is all the results of the feedback. So we hope you enjoy that this year in Las Vegas. We're really excited to welcome you to Vegas, and I'm going to turn it over now to Paul with Wyndham Hotels.
Hi, everybody. How are you today? I'm Paul Mason. I am Director of Wholesale Account Management for Wyndham Hotels and Resorts. It's a pleasure to be here with all of our friends and associates that we've had for many, many years. We do this lunch, I want to say, for the last 10 years or so, and that was when I, you know, originally had hair and didn't have a beard that was gray, and I could see, and now I can't hear either. So that gives you kind of a timeline. Now, there are three general rules to all presentations. Three. The first rule is never make it long and boring. The second one is do not keep people from their lunch, which is coming up in about 5 minutes. So I'm going to move through this very quickly. And who knows what the first one is? What's the biggest rule you never do for a presentation or a speech? Keep people from alcohol. At least that's my Mason rules. That's all it is. All right. So we're going to get started. Where's the clicker?
Dale's little girl is heading to college. Luckily, her dorm is about 10 minutes from a hotel by Wyndham. Ashley's meeting all her in-laws, and she's about 10 minutes from a hotel by Wyndham. Jeff's flying to... Oh, never mind. But hey, 10 minutes from a Wyndham. He's having the best day ever, and he's about 10 minutes from a hotel by Wyndham. With over 6,000 hotels across the country, a great hotel by Wyndham is closer than you think.
So we're about 5 minutes from lunch, so we're going to move here. What is our mission? We make travel possible for all. We also handle all economic tiers and all regions of the globe. That is our vision, and you're going to see that a little bit through the presentation. And our brand promise, of course, is we make hotel travel possible for all. Elevated experiences for the everyday traveler, regardless of the price point. Again, we have 20 brands and over 9,000 hotels in all of the regions. So for us, it is all about different tiers, different prices and price points. Walk. This is who we are. We are the largest franchise company in terms of hotels in the world. We are also the world's leading provider of select service, or what used to be really called kind of limited service or economy service, if you will. And we also have a management company that is leading in the industry as well. This is our diverse portfolio, and I don't want to spend too much time on this, obviously. 9,000 hotels, 80 countries, 20 brands around the globe, which now includes La Quinta with over 900 of their locations. So as you can see, we are growing every year. This is a little picture of basically all of our brands. The only brand that we do not have in North America is the Ramada Encore. Unfortunately, we couldn't do it because this small city that Raphael's going to talk about, I think tomorrow, called Las Vegas, and they have an encore. No one welcomes the world like Wyndham. That is true. Again, we're all over the country, all over the world. Again, with our 20 brands and our 9,000 hotels, we do reflect that. A little bit of our growth over the last couple of years and what we're looking to do in terms of goals. We are the leading hotel provider in terms of franchises in China. We plan over the next couple of years to have over 2,000 of them. We are moving very quickly in Seeper, Trademark, which is one of our brands, one of our newest brands, which we're very excited about. And we'll talk further about that in our meetings that we have with all of our partners. We'll be launching throughout all regions, not just here in North America. One of the other things we're doing, too, is we're really reaching out with brands that have been typically domestic and also moving them internationally. I'm going to show you the pictures real fast. We'll go through them because now I have 3 minutes left. So here we go. Here's one in China. This is a Wingate. A little different than the Wingates we have here in domestic U.S. We're hoping that changes soon, but give you an idea of what we're doing in Asia and Asia Pacific. This is in Vietnam, a Wyndham Garden. Another Wyndham in Vietnam. And a Ramada Encore in China. And again, we unfortunately don't have Encore here in the domestic U.S. I know, I see a lot of shocked faces. This is Wyndham too, guys. This is us internationally, yes. Very excited. Take pride. Yes, I do. And this is our Dolce brand in Greece. Wyndham Granado Thermas Resorts and Spa in Brazil. It is the first in Brazil of its kind. So again, everyone's looking at it like, oh my God, wow, yeah. And the first Trademark that we have, which is in Belize, so wow, huh? Look at that. All individual units, and we are really expanding this brand. Next year, I'll probably do a lot of talking about this, and at IPW, we're going to have the Trademark VP with us to talk further about it. Now, back in North America, why we are all here. These are the six of the top mid-scale brands in North America right now. Wingate, La Quinta American, Hawthorn, Baymont, and Ramada. And here are some of the pictures of what they look like today. This is a prototype for American. And the inside of it, kind of sleek looking, very different than what they were 10 years ago before we had them. This is a Wyndham Garden, another prototype of what all the new Wyndham Gardens are going to look like. And this is also a fantastic concept that a lot of hotel companies are doing now, where we are combining brands that make sense in certain regions, certain areas of North America. Here you have Hawthorn and La Quinta. Hawthorn prototype, which is our extended stay hotel brand. Now this is I'm very excited about this. I have to spend at least 10 seconds on it. Days Inn by Wyndham. Everyone knows about Days Inn and the story of Days Inn for the most part. It is one of our economy brands. But we have always said to ourselves, because it's economy, it doesn't mean it has to look bad or cheap or just not good. This has changed that. You're not going to see the floral patterns anymore on the comforter set. You're going to see more of the sun, if you will, coming out through the room itself. This is going to be instituted in all Days Inns. They'll obviously have a lot of time to work on it as we kind of go through the process, which all hoteliers know what I mean by the process. So. Oh, whoops, Microtel, gotta get the Microtel out here. Okay, oh, there it is. And this is the Microtel, this is what they're going to be looking like as well. Not bad for economy lodging. Business Travel News, number one and number two was Wingate and La Quinta. So we're very excited about that. Obviously, those kind of kudos go a long way with our travelers. And that's the end of the presentation, and yes, with 1 minute to spare. Thank you again, everybody. Enjoy. Oh, wait, video. Got one more video for you. Sorry. See, I was so excited about that minute. Thank you, everyone. Enjoy lunch.
Just a quick housekeeping. After we go, we just go to the plaza to have lunch. We'll come back. The tour operators will come to the room and sit on the tables. And the suppliers that have in their badge number one, they'll come to the power hour number one. The ones that have number two, they will come to power number two. And the number three, they will come to the hour number three. In the other hours, if you are not on those groups, you can go to the educational sessions. Enjoy the lunch.